Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill.
So today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we have Dr. Jennifer Lisa Vest. And Dr. Vest is a medical intuitive, an educator, Reiki master, in addition to many other healing modalities, Akashic records, all sorts of fun stuff. And we're really excited to speak with her today. So how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. I'm so happy to be on your podcast. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We're very honored to have you.
Yeah.
So usually we begin these shows by asking something along the lines of, what brought you to the healing path?
Okay. So it's kind of a long story, but I'm going to shorten it.
Okay. Yeah.
I was pretty much born on the healing path, although I spent a good deal of my younger life resisting it. But I was born with a lot of gifts. And so as a child, I was, seeing and hearing spirit. I was tuning into people's feelings, clairsentiently. I was seeing into the future. And I had spirit teachers coming to my bed at night and taking me out of body every night and taking me to the other side and taking me to spirit school and kind of reminding me of what I came to do. And then throughout my life, I kept having experiences throughout my young life where people would identify me as somebody with certain gifts who needed training. And so it started with my great-grandmother when I was 2. And my great grandmother knew a lot about herbs. And so I got this early training in kind of herbs and natural being in nature and the importance of that for, for everything, healing, but everything else. And then, later on in my 20s, I got trained by some women healers and herbalists in Trinidad and also Jamaica. I was involved in the Shango religion and also the revivalist and Pulpomania traditions in Jamaica. And these are both African-based Christian traditions that were, a syncretism that occurred during slavery. And so I got training from the number of healers in those traditions. And there's really more than I can name. Like, I remember some of the names, like Mother White and Mother T. And, I went around to all the different parishes in Jamaica, because at the time I was working for a professor, I had a job, but these people just kind of grabbed me and were like, you're one of us. And so I kept getting, different trainings. And the same thing happened later on when I went to a sweat lodge ceremony, because I was guided to by my guides just to go for healing purposes for myself, because I wasn't well. And then the fire keeper, as soon as I got there, said, hey, you're a fire keeper. You need to get trained. I'm going to train you. And so that was kind of what kept happening to me. And so I had these gifts. And then, my mother's psychic and my mother's mother's mother, that whole line of the family. And then the other side also has it on my dad's side. But it wasn't something that too many people were really practicing that when I was growing up. And of course, mm-hmm. I got teased and was trying to keep it quiet because, there's not a lot of respect for it in mainstream society, like you said. And so people think you're crazy if you talk about these things. And so I tried to keep it on the down low. But I was always kind of being trained in the background while I was pursuing this other life as an intellectual. And I got to a point where I got sick. And I got so sick that I was trying every possible healing modality. And what I like to say now is that I feel like that was spirit's way of training me in all those, to learn about all the different options there are for patients, because I tried them all and I researched them all. I'm a scholar, so I didn't just like go to acupuncture, I had to go read all about it and study it.
Yeah.
And then go, right? I didn't just go to, that's what I did with every modality. I just learned. I did past life regression. I did naturopathy, acupuncture. I did psychotherapy. I did ceremony. I did, all kinds of treatments. And I also kind of studied them just for my own, kind of healing. And that gave me this, kind of training that led me to get more serious about training. And so I got sick to the point where I had a medical intuitive tell me that if you don't take your gifts more seriously and develop them more consciously, you're going to stay sick. And so up until that point, I had gotten lots of trainings, but they were never my choice. It was never like me going out seeking a teacher. Teachers were always coming to me, and I was like, okay, you know, okay, I'll learn this. And and I got to this point where I had to be the one to say, no, I want to go and find teachers. And at that point, I moved to Florida and I started taking psychic development classes, and I was led to the Casadega spiritualist community from one of my teachers, Maida Jones, and ended up studying with a whole lot of teachers there, mediums, healers, psychic development teachers, and ended up also then studying Reiki and becoming a Reiki master. And I was trained by Marie Gates, who was also in Casadega. And then I went on to just take other, you know, I did, you know, some pranic healing. I ended up studying quantum healing hypnosis with Dolores Cannon. And I just, my whole life, I'm always, you know, learning new things, taking as many, you know, trainings as I can, and always, always seeking, you know, new teachers. So it was at a certain point, after taking a number of classes, that my teachers kept saying to me, you know, you have a very unique gift of medical intuition, because, you know, I'd be in class, we're doing readings on each other, right? The students, we're doing mediumship readings on each other, trying to bring through our dead relatives. And what I was always getting was the person's physical ailments, or the physical ailments of the dead people I was bringing through, or their cause of death. And I was always getting that. And that wasn't something that my classmates were getting. Mm-hmm. And so my teacher said, you know, this is kind of a unique gift. And, you know, back then it was, I think it's, you know, there are more and more people now who are developing medical intuition, in part thanks to people like me, because I now teach it. Back then there weren't really courses. And there weren't as many medical intuitives that knew they were medical intuitives, or that were practicing, maybe, at least, you know, in where I was. And so it was because of that, that I kind of got serious about, oh, I think I want to develop my gift of medical intuition. And, you know, I was someone who had been through a very long healing journey with lots of medical mysteries and unsatisfactory appointments with healthcare practitioners. And I had a form of heart disease that took them 10 years to diagnose. And so I was just going to doctors and having them tell me it was in my head, having them tell me, I remember I had a doctor actually say to me, oh, you just think you have chest pain. You don't have chest pain.
Oh, man.
And meanwhile, I was suffering. And so I felt that experience that I had made me particularly sympathetic to patients who are going through that. And I think that really inspired me to want to be in a position of service where I could help people who were going through that situation where they were sick and they weren't getting the help, or their doctors were just baffled. They couldn't figure out what was going on, or they were giving them a diagnosis and a treatment, but it wasn't actually helping them. Or, you know, a lot of people, they get these, what I call, unhelpful diagnoses. So if you get a diagnosis where they tell you, and this happened to me a lot, oh, you have, you know, disease X, there's nothing we can do about it. You're going to have it for life and you just have to live with it. I find that to be a useless diagnosis, because it's not helping the person to progress. So I felt like I wanted to help people like that. And that's what got me to really kind of hone in on medical intuition as a practice. Now, I started out, you know, when I became a medical intuitive, that was my focus. And then over time, I expanded my offerings and started offering more of the other things that I do, like reading the Akashic Records for the purpose of helping people identify their life purpose.
Yeah,
that's amazing. This is a kind of a conversation we've been having with several other people through the episodes, especially people who like to learn a lot and learn a lot of different kinds of techniques and modalities. And how do you integrate all those things? Because oftentimes we see there's sometimes a superficial understanding and just drawing from this and that without going deep. And you have to go deep to really get the core of any practice, but it also takes a lot of time to go deep, and a lot of people want to be able to do multiple kinds of things. And you seems like it is possible to master or at least get competency in several fields. But how do you integrate all of those separate traditions and modalities?
Well, I don't recommend it for everybody. I don't think that everybody should be studying multiple traditions, but everybody should trying to practice multiple modalities. I have a kind of unique life path. You know, I incarnated into a particular type of body that's racially and culturally mixed. And so I ended up getting training by the three different traditions, well, four, that I'm born into. And so I'm a little different from other people who may have been born into one tradition where they wouldn't need to necessarily learn more than one tradition, right? So there's that. But also I was born with a unique life purpose, and I was born with a lot of gifts. And that just is because of the purpose that I have, and the gifts are important to the purpose that I have. And so what I always tell people is that your training and your modalities and the work you do should all be guided by your purpose.
Yeah.
And so there should be a concerted effort on the part of people to get some clarity about why they incarnated and what they came to do. Everybody didn't incarnate to express psychic gifts. And so Everybody isn't going to be psychic, and that's okay. And some people just want to be psychic because they think it's going to confer power on them or something. And that's, of course, not the purpose of psychic gifts. It's not to have power over people. But some people find it very glamorous, the idea of, oh, I can read other people's minds, or I can, you know, make people do stuff with my, you know, with my magic, or, you know, whatever. And they are attracted to it for the wrong reasons, but they may not have incarnated with any psychic gifts because their purpose this time is to focus on something else. And so I think it's silly when people start kind of getting into this mindset of, oh, I want to learn as many different modalities as I can so I can practice as many different things as I can so I can, you know, look really impressive or whatever. I didn't learn the different modalities I did because I was just looking to learn things. I was guided. So I was guided by spirit, and I kept thinking I was doing one thing, and then I kept being led to do something else. And so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I'm sure you're familiar with this. It's like,
yeah.
I was a professor. I was, you know, I had spent many, many years training to become a philosophy professor. And I thought that was my path. But then all of this stuff kept happening in the background, pushing me more and more towards healing as a primary vocation. And so then I ended up, you know, hanging a shingle as a medical intuitive. And I thought, I'm just going to be a medical intuitive, you know. But then, of course, that didn't happen because I started having people coming to me for health issues. But then it turned out that some of them, the reason they were sick was because of spiritual causes, like they weren't clear about their purpose, or they were off purpose, or they had some unresolved soul contracts. And the more I saw that, then I was kind of pushed into, I ended up being kind of led to do Akashic Records. I didn't even know that's what I was doing. So I wasn't like, oh, I want to learn Akashic Records. I was working with clients, and I was going to this library to get information. And I had been doing that my whole life. I didn't know what an Akashic Records was. One day I went to a psychic fair at a spiritualist church in Rhode Island, and I got a reading by someone who was doing the Akashic Records. And I thought it was really interesting. And so I went online and said, what is the Akashic Records? And I was like, I'm going to go get a reading. And I found this person, and I contacted her, and I said, oh, I want to get a reading. And of course, you know, spirit led me to this person because there's a lot of people I could have contacted, right? But I ended up with this person who wrote me back and said, I'm not seeing clients right now. However, you don't need me to do a reading. I'm going to send you a meditation. You can access the records by yourself. So she sends me a paper meditation. It wasn't a recording. It was just a printout, right? Of like words. So I'm sitting here with this paper, reading it, closing my eyes, opening them to read it. You are now entering the records. Okay. Now you're walking up, you know, and I'm doing this. Not the best way to meditate. And I only got through like three lines of it, and I was in my library.
Wow.
How I learned that my library is called the Akashic Records.
Interesting.
And so as I was working with clients in medical intuition, I kept being led more and more to this library to get more information about their, you know, the spiritual components of their illness, like their purpose and their contracts and their life lessons. And then that developed into a whole nother type of reading that I started doing, where I started saying, okay, I'm going to do life purpose readings where people who have already come to me for health, but now they just want to really focus on this for like the whole hour. And then I ended up doing that. And the same kind of happened with so many modalities. Like one of my teachers, you know, Marie Gates, she was a medium and a healer. And I had taken, I think, healing classes with her. And she actually then approached me because she was doing an invitation only Reiki class. And she only invited five of us to this class. And it was a 1 year, because she taught it old school. Like, you know, it wasn't this weekend nonsense where people want to learn Reiki in a weekend, which is, it's just not right. It was a thing where we worked with her closely over a year, and just the five of us. And so again, I wasn't really seeking out Reiki, but, you know, Reiki sought me out. And then, you know, later when I was, you know, asked, I was volunteering in a church doing energy healing, you know, I was combining what I had learned from Reiki, what I had learned from my spiritual healing teachers, and then also what I had learned from pranic healing. I had a friend who was a pranic healer. We were both doing healing work in the same church, and I was really impressed with his energy. And so I said, how did you get trained? And he said, pranic. I said, okay, I'm going to go take a pranic healing class because I want to have that same type of healing energy that I saw him working with. And so, you know, a lot of times it's about, you know, just having spirit lead you, or being led by, you know, service. Like, how can I provide more for my clients, rather than, oh, I'm going to learn that. I want to learn that because it looks interesting, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think especially these days with like TikTok and Instagram, you're like seeing all these things from all across, and you get very distracted and scatterbrained in a certain way. I want this one, that one, that. And I think some people are, and you can see this from astrology too, like people have certain planetary combinations that make one more interested in looking at more perspectives and more modalities, but that's a combination that most people don't have. And also, you know, most people probably it's better to develop just one thing, but again, every person is different. So they all have different,
and people have to listen to their higher self and to their guidance to figure out what they're supposed to develop, you know?
Yeah. So how do you advise people to get in touch with their higher self and their purpose in this life? Besides just getting an Akashic records reading.
Yeah. Well, you know, in all my classes, I teach people how to do a higher self meditation, and I have it on my YouTube so people can access it for free. But it's just basically, and I can just describe it to people, because once you learn how to do this, you know, you can do it for the rest of your life. It's just about, you know, visualizing the crown of your head opening up, and then sending up kind of a light beam up to your higher self. And you can just visualize your higher self as a giant golden sun. Mm. And then you connect your little self to your higher self, you know, via the crown chakra. And then you allow all of this kind of wisdom and awareness to flow down into your energetic body from your higher self. And you can also envision that higher self energy coming through and spinning your chakras and going around you, and then expanding your aura. And once you're in that kind of bubble of expanded aura, and you're connected to this infinite source, which is your higher self, you can receive, you know, healing, you can receive expanded awareness, you can receive messages. And so I think that's a really good practice for people to get into on a regular basis, just connecting to your higher self, ideally every day. And you can do it in just, you know, 5 minutes. You could be anywhere and just visualize that. And if you keep connecting to your higher self, you're basically saying to your higher self, I'm open to receive guidance. And then you're going to receive guidance, you know, throughout the day in different ways. You may receive it during the meditation, but you may also continue to receive it throughout the day or in your dreams at night. But it's really just about setting that intention and being open and being kind of wanting to receive information from a higher level, you know? Mm-hmm. And once people start doing that, like a higher self meditation, I also recommend people keep a psychic journal and a dream journal as well, which, you know, is often the same thing, where, you know, you're just starting to jot down stuff that you're getting so you can keep track of how accurate it is. And so, like, if you get an impression about somebody when you first meet them, before you actually know them, you know, you jot it down. And then when you get to know them, you look back and see, you know, how accurate was I in my intuitive feelings about this person? Or if you have a sense of something that's going to happen in the future, you write it down. If you have different feelings in different places, right? So your clairsentience, are you tuning into places or people and getting certain feelings every time you are around certain places or people? You know, you can write that down, and over time you're going to become aware of how useful that is, or how, you know, or maybe it's not useful, maybe it's hindering you. Like, for example, when I was young, I found it very difficult to be in hospitals and bars. Mm-hmm. Hospitals were always full of spirits, very unhappy spirits who had died traumatically and were, you know, kind of hanging around the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then bars are also full of earthbound spirits who like to drink and who kind of mm-hmm. stick around because they want to continue to drink vicariously through the living. And those spirits are also not very pleasant. And so over time, I came to an understanding of why I felt uncomfortable in those places. And I began to, and it was reliable. That was a reliable feeling. Mm-hmm. And then there are other times where we have feelings which aren't clairsentient. They're just emotional, right? Like, we don't like certain people.
Yeah.
Not because they have bad energy. It's because we just don't like them because they remind us of our cousin who, you know, used to call us names, right? So, and so I tell people that, you know, starting to take your intuitive feelings and impressions seriously, whether in the form of a journal or talking about it with other people, joining a psychic circle, joining a community where talk about this stuff is normal, anything that you do like that, that is kind of you signaling to the universe that you're taking this seriously, is going to then cause you to have more experiences. Mm-hmm. And to get more wisdom from your higher self about, you know, your path and what you'll be led, like you'll be led by your higher self to different teachers and teachings and books and circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So relying on your higher self, but are there also any other tips that you might have for getting clear on our purpose if folks are trying to find clarity on that? It's such an important thing. I feel like if you don't have purpose in your life, then you're subject to more suffering. And, you know,
yeah, one of the things I used to do is I used to teach this class called Set Your Life Purpose GPS.
Nice.
And it was all about that kind of exercises to help people
awesome.
Clarity. And so I'll give kind of an abbreviated lesson from that. I used to have people do this blisses and gifts exercise. And so I would tell people, make a list of all the things that bring you bliss. So incredible joy, right? And make a list of all your gifts. And the gifts I would define as things that you're just naturally good at. Maybe things that since you were like in kindergarten, people would say, oh, you know, Jennifer, she's a good talker, you know. Samantha really is good with numbers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Robert really is such a kind, he's so comforting to the other kids. You know, the kids really mm-hmm. like to be around Robert. You know, there's mm-hmm. certain gifts that we just have, and people will notice them. People will comment on them, and we might notice them too. And it might be something that's, you know, identifiable, that's connected to a career, like, you know, you're really good at playing a musical instrument, or it might be something, you know, more nebulous, but you make a list of all those. And it's going to take some time. People need to just kind of sit with it and reflect. It's not just going to be, I can just make a list of all my gifts right here. You're going to maybe want to spend some time on it, because we're not always aware of all of our gifts, especially if they're things that we're focused on or that we've taken for granted our whole life. You know, if you're really good at speaking, you may not even have ever thought about how good you are at speaking, because it's just something that you've always taken for granted, for example. And so you're going to want to kind of reflect on not just what you know your gifts are, but what have you heard other people say about you? Like, if you've consistently gotten a certain type of compliment, you know, you're going to write that down. And mm-hmm. so you make this list of gifts, and you make this list of blisses. Blisses maybe is a little easier to make that list, but it also requires some reflection, because again, there are some things that we really love, but maybe we don't feel that they're important. So we don't think about them or talk about them. Like, maybe, you know, maybe somebody is just supremely joyous when they're in the forest, for example, mm-hmm. but they don't really get to go to the forest that often, and they don't really think about that as being that important. It's just like an odd thing that they're, that brings them great joy. Well, that needs to go on that list. So like, you know, some of mine were like, I really liked going to conferences. I've always liked going to conferences.
Yeah.
I found that whenever I'm at conferences, I'm just so happy, you know? I'm just like, doesn't even matter what conference it is, doesn't matter who's there. I'm just like, to be here.
This so is the best, yeah.
There are things like that in our life where we're just really happy in certain contexts or doing certain things or around certain people, or, you know, there's certain things that are just bring us great, you know, that bring us bliss. And so we make that list. And then after you've made those two lists, you try to look at the intersections. And the intersections between those two lists are going to point you to your purpose. So the fact that I have such joy being in conferences, you know, that kind of, it relates to my purpose. My purpose has to do with me bringing people together or being, you know, in gatherings and helping to gather people, right? So it makes sense that when I'm in a large gathering, I feel very happy, because whenever we're on our life path, we're going to be happy. And so that's what you want to look at too, is, you know, you should feel very happy when you're pursuing things that are in alignment with your purpose. You know, you should feel that bliss. And so you look at the intersection of the gifts and the blisses, and then you use that to kind of point yourself in the direction of, you know, activities, places, and people that you should be with that are going to kind of be in alignment with your purpose.
I feel like that's very helpful for a lot of people.
Definitely. Good advice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you don't have to necessarily be psychic to write those things down, you know, or even develop in that way to be able to do that. And that's a kind of, in my opinion, a kind of self-inquiry as well, you know, inquiring into what you are.
I'm curious if you can speak to like people's life path and people's life purpose over lifetimes. Like, you have some insight on your past lives you've spoke to, and I'm wondering if you have like a thread that you're following through lives, or if it even works like that, if you have any thoughts on that. Yeah.
So that's something I've learned a lot about working with clients. So, you know, because I'm always being led by my guides to different types of knowledge, I was led to start, you know, going to the Akashic Records. And in the Akashic Records, one of the rooms in my Akashic Records allows me to take people into their past lives. And then I'm allowed to watch their past lives and also watch their pre-life conferences where they're sitting down with their incarnation guide and they're planning this life, what they're going to do in this life, what they're going to learn, what kind of body they're going to take on, what kind of family, what country, what ethnicity, what race, what religion, what sexuality, what disability, right? All of that is something that people make decisions about on the soul level. And I've been able to sit in on a lot of those pre-life conferences and learn a lot there. But if over time, my Akashic Records kept expanding, where I keep getting more rooms in my Akashic Records. And at a certain point, another room was added onto my library called the map room. And in the map room, I'm shown maps of people's souls. And it looks kind of like a map of a tree. And so people's souls, in my understanding, are represented as trees, where the trunk is kind of the main purpose of the soul. And then the branches represent different kind of sub purposes. And then along those branches, there are smaller branches, and those are, you know, lifetimes. And so a person might be working on a particular branch. So for example, one of the branches that I've been working on is justice. And so this is one of many lifetimes I've had where I've been working on the topic of justice. But then I have another branch that I'm also working on this same lifetime, which is about healing and teaching love. Well, teaching love is actually my central purpose in the soul, but like healing and kind of warring for justice are two of the branches that this particular incarnation is related to. And so, yeah, when you go look at the soul map, you can get information about, you know, what are some of the bigger, you know, what's, you have the life, your life purpose is the purpose of this incarnation. But then this incarnation is part of a theme where you might have several incarnations. What is it called? Pattern. Sorry, a soul pattern. You know, I'm not doing these readings right now. So I'm trying to remember them. I'm taking a break from them, but I spent years doing these readings. And so this information just kept evolving. And so people will have a pattern where maybe you've lived, you know, 10 or 15 lifetimes or 50, where you've been working on purposes that all kind of fit into one pattern. Like the one I gave was justice. So justice is a very broad pattern, and then it could manifest in different, very different life purposes, but they all kind of fit broadly into that pattern of justice. And so, for example, in one incarnation, I could be a judge. In another incarnation, I could be, you know, a lawyer. In another incarnation, I could be a criminal. In another incarnation, I could be a revolutionary, you know, and so I could have all of these different lifetimes where there's a common theme of teaching or learning about or something to do with justice, but the individual purpose for each life is different. And so I did start getting this type of information for some people, not everybody, because everybody isn't meant to know their purpose explicitly and consciously. Everybody isn't meant to know their theme. Like everyone isn't meant to know about all of their past lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we're all incarnating at different points.
Yeah.
In our evolution. And it, you know, you got to think about it like school. You know, if you're in kindergarten, it's not appropriate to learn about fifth grade work. You got to wait till you get to the fifth grade. And so it's like that with souls. You know, some of us are incarnating, and spiritually, we're at one stage of learning, and we're not ready. It would be inappropriate for us to learn other things. And so I don't know. I think as Americans, we kind of get caught up in thinking that equality is the same as sameness, and that we should all be the same, and that's how we're equal. But that's really not what equality is, you know.
Yeah.
We are all equal. All souls are equal, and all souls are equally valid and equally worthy. But all souls are not at the same point in terms of their education, or their spiritual education. And so there is no one size fits all when it comes to, you know, psychic development or spiritual development. And so, you know, some people come to me for a life purpose reading, and it turns out that the purpose of their life, their incarnation, is something that's very straightforward. You know, like I came here to learn how to be a loving member of a family, like how to really be a loving, contributing member of a family. And because maybe they've had many incarnations where they had really, really intense conflicts with family members. And, you know, and what you see in this is, when I say intense conflicts, I mean like one family member kills another, or, you know, one family member is very oppressive to another family member, or, you know. And so for some people, it may be something like that. Someone else might come to, you know, just to be a teacher, and their purpose is to be a teacher, and they spend their whole life teaching whatever group that they came here to teach. And then there are other people who came to change the world, and they came to have more of a global impact. And these are the souls that come with very, very big auras, who tend to be magnetic, who become either leaders or public speakers or celebrities. And they come in with certain kind of magnetic aura gifts, and or certain speaking gifts, or, you know, and because they came to impact a certain number of people. And some people come in to make massive changes in global consciousness, right? So there are so many different purposes, and they're all equally important. And so I forgot what your question was now. Gone off.
Oh, no, that was good. That was very enlightening.
Yeah, it's so cool to think about.
You're asking about
how the soul works, and like the past lives.
We have life purposes. There's a lot of them. And some people, it's valuable for them to understand all of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they came to do certain important work that requires them to have that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're not remembering your past lives, you probably don't need to.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So most people can't handle remembering their past lives, and it can make you crazy. it's hard for you to remember what life you're living. Mm-hmm. So, and I, you know, as a child, I was shown, a bunch of past lives. And then as an adult, I have had lots of experiences visiting past lives. And I remember there have been times in my life where I wake up in the morning and I have to ask myself, okay, which life is this? Who am I? And I have to make sure I'm clear. Okay, I'm Jennifer right now. I'm living in, you know, Earth, you know, 21st century, right? Mm. Some people can't keep track of what life they're living. Mm. And so I think there are some forms of psychosis or mental illness which have to do with people losing track of who they are and where they are. And I think also it can just in a less serious way, it can just create a distance between you and the people you're incarnated with. If you're always kind of thinking about other lifetimes. And that is one of the challenges of those who do this type of work, is that we have to stay grounded. We have to stay grounded and connected to the people that we're with. We can't just always be off thinking about other incarnations or other world things. We have to, we incarnated here for a purpose. If we were just meant to be always in the other world, we would just have stayed over there. We wouldn't have incarnated, right? So we came mm-hmm. here on a body for a purpose. We're physical beings. We're not just spiritual beings. We're spiritual beings who have chosen to become physical beings for this time period. And so we have to remember that, and we have to find ways to stay grounded and find ways to stay connected to our sense of, you know, community.
Yeah. And
for a lot of people, that would be too difficult mm-hmm. if they had all of that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, some people might start treating people differently, like, well, in my past life, you killed me. So, you know, or whatever. In our past life, you were the.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So one of your gifts and one of your purposes in this life is, as you mentioned before, that you learned is medical intuition. So I'm wondering if you can describe a little bit more about what that means, what medical intuition is and how it works, and if it's something that you develop, or if it's something that, you know, people are born with and maybe some people can develop it. I'm curious about that aspect of it as well.
Medical intuition is a kind of a unique form of psychic work where you use your intuitive gifts, clairvoyance, clairsentience, claircognizance, clairaudience, telepathy, etc., to tune into someone's physical body and find out what's going on with them, to find out if they have to help them solve a medical mystery, and perhaps to help them get on the right track to finding practitioners and treatments that can help them. So it's similar to other psychic work, but it's kind of a specialized form, because whereas as a psychic, I might tune into someone and say, oh, I can feel your energy. I might tune into their aura and get information about, you know, their energetic bodies. As a medical intuitive, I have to be able to tune into the physical body, and I have to actually be able to see their organs or, you know, see their blood. And I have to be able to describe very specifically what's going on with a particular organ or with, you know, a particular disease process. And it also could include, you know, some of the information that you would get in a more general psychic reading, because in a medical intuition scan, you can scan at different levels. And so I teach my students to scan, you know, physically and get physical information, but also to scan for emotional information, which you can get from the emotional layer of the aura. But you can also scan for spiritual information that's related to their illness. And so sometimes that entails going into the Akashic records or possibly working as a medium and talking to their guides or their.
Yeah. So, I mean, that makes sense too. I mean, I've been studying astrology pretty in depth lately, and you can see all these kinds of things from an astrological chart as well. But a lot of times, like, the physical illness is the end result of other problems on other planes. And like, we can look at the karmic level of like why somebody is ill, and some things only have karmic solutions, but it's hard to tell just from somebody's physical illness, like how fixed that karma is. But being able to look at those deeper or inner or higher reasons can be very helpful for somebody who hasn't been able to find a good diagnosis, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother, Michael, she's an astrologer. So I also have learned from her. I'm not an astrologer, but yeah, karma is one of the causes of illness. That would be one of the spiritual causes of some illness. And yeah, and then some illness has an emotional cause, and some has a physical cause, and some has all three, or two or three. And so, you know, when I teach medical intuition, I teach people to access all of the different causes of illness. Because what I've seen a lot with patients, with clients who have medical mysteries and who go to a medical intuitive, is a lot of them have gone to a lot of doctors or healthcare practitioners and haven't gotten answers, and have been told it's all in their head, or it's all emotional, you just need therapy. And while it's the case that some illnesses are caused by emotional imbalance, that's a really small percentage compared to of the clients I see, compared to those who actually have physical causes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually both. It's not either or. And so we
have
to believe that either your illness is caused by emotional imbalance, or it's caused by a physical. Well, that's because Western medicine has trained people to only focus on the physical. And when they can't find the physical, their default is to say, oh, it must be emotional, and we don't understand that, so it's not real. In fact, it's usually, you know, at least both, if not also, you know, something else. And so it's really important to kind of disentangle that so that people can figure out what to do to get better. Also, what I see a lot, because of all the medical gaslighting, a lot of people who have been on a long healing journey with, you know, unresolved complaints, they're going to develop emotional issues from their experience of medical gaslighting. And those emotional issues did not cause their illness. They were the result of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Backwards, yes, a lot of people who are chronically ill are going to be emotionally, you know, difficult people.
Yeah.
And because anyone who's been in pain for 10 years is probably not going to be the most pleasant person to be around. And that's true for anybody who has to experience pain long-term. It does make you cranky. And we know that with children, right? When children are not feeling well, they're cranky, and we're extra loving to them because we know the reason they're cranky is because they're not feeling well. Somehow with adults, we expect people to be not feeling well and to still be very pleasant. And if they're not, we say, oh, you just have emotional issues, that's why you're sick. It's like, no, I'm sick, and I've been sick for so long that, yeah, now I'm a really cranky person. But if you could help me get rid of this pain, I'm sure I would go back to being my delightful self. Mm-hmm. So yeah. We have to address both. And so a lot of the clients I see, I will encounter, especially a lot of women who have had this experience where they've been invalidated by their family, their friends, their healthcare practitioners, and that has contributed to their illness, so that they're not only physically ill, but now they're so sad and angry and frustrated and isolated. And so that all has to be addressed in the healing process. You have to heal the physical ailments, but you also have to heal those experiences and those feelings that have resulted from that journey.
Yeah. So Is this work more focused on finding the causes of problems, or do you also can you find solutions using medical intuition? And like, how does it integrate with other healing modalities?
Well, the way that I teach, I have a particular method of teaching medical intuition. I call the VEST protocol, and I do focus heavily on causes. And so I think that's kind of the meat of the work is causes, that once you really get good at identifying causes, you're really in a position to help people. Because most people who come to a medical intuitive, that's their main question is, why am I sick? What's going on? Why am I sick? And then, yes, how do I get better? The way I see the role of the medical intuitive in terms of the resolution or the solution is primarily to identify what the problem is, and then to make suggestions for either types of practitioners to go to or types of treatments. So, for example, when I'm doing a reading scan on somebody, I might get, okay, there's a problem with the organ, there's dysfunction here, and you need to, and then I might get, okay, you need to see a naturopath, or you might want to go see a certain type of specialist within allopathic, or you might need to see a Chinese doctor. And then I also, because my background is in herbs, I often get herbs. And so intuitively, I will get herbs for the client. But because I'm not a licensed herbalist, I cannot, prescribe. You can't prescribe. So medical intuitives are not allowed legally to diagnose or prescribe, right, in the United States.
Herbalists can't really either.
Yeah.
There are certain states where they can, if they're licensed.
I don't know I know in England you can, if you've done the qualified herbalist training, but I think it's very unregulated in the US, and you just generally can't give out medical advice unless you're a doctor.
It's almost impossible for anyone who's not trained in allopathy.
Right.
Right.
Prescribe or diagnose. And so we, as medical intuitives, we have to be very careful. We can't actually prescribe. And so one of the things that I do to kind of address that legality is I always refer them to someone who is licensed. I always say, like, oh, I'm getting this herb for you, but I'm not a licensed herbalist. I'm not a licensed, so go to a naturopath, or go to an Ayurvedic doctor, or go to a Chinese doctor. So I tend to get herbs. There are three kind of main, what's the root name for that class of, kind of traditions of herbalism. Mm-hmm. There's, Native American or North American herbs, and then there's Chinese or Asian herbs, Ayurvedic, which is Indian herbs, and those traditions are all separate. And so when I'm getting an herb for somebody intuitively, I'm not trained in Ayurvedic, I'm not trained in traditional Chinese medicine, and I also don't have I didn't do classes in herbology. I learned herbs from traditional teachers, and I have learned them from my grandmother, and I mostly get them intuitively. So I work with plants as beings. And so my understanding is that when we work with plants, we have to understand that they're beings like us, and that we're collaborating with them. It's an allyship. It's not that we're using plants. It's that we have a connection or a partnership with them. And so that's the way I was trained. And so I have certain relationships to plants. And so plants speak to me. And that's how I get intuitive information about plants. And that's how I work as an herbalist. I work by having plants. When I go outside, plants will say, oh, I'm good for this, right? And so you can do that. You can have these conversations and you can get information. So when I'm sitting with a client, a plant will present itself and say, tell them to take ashwagandha. Well, a lot of times I'll get these plants, I've never heard of them before. So when I was just getting my native plants and plants from the Caribbean, I knew those. But over time, I started getting Chinese herbs. I started getting Ayurvedic herbs from India, and I was completely unfamiliar with them. And so I'll be in a session and I'll suddenly get a plant. Like I remember getting when I got ashwagandha, and I was like, okay, I got to look this up. I don't know this plant, but I'm getting ashwagandha for you. And I'll look it up to see if it matches their ailment. Like if somebody is actually using it for that. And then I'll say, oh, okay, I'm getting that ashwagandha would help you. And I see when we look it up that it is good for hormonal, imbalance. So maybe that's why we're getting it for you, because we found a hormonal imbalance and that's the cause of one of your symptoms. And then I'll say to them, I'm not an Ayurvedic doctor. You should go see an Ayurvedic doctor to get the proper dosing and everything. So, as a medical intuitive, you could get all kinds of treatments, but then you have to always give the disclaimer of, make sure you go see somebody who's licensed. And of course, a lot of people don't. They want to do their own thing.
Yeah.
Then they have to sign a disclaimer saying, I'm not going to hold you responsible. If I go out and dose myself with ashwagandha and I don't know the proper dosage and I'm interfering with some medicine I'm taking that I haven't talked to my pharmacist about, that's their responsibility.
Right.
kind of have to make sure that they're aware of that, that they have to take some precautions. But I do often get herbs in a session. I will also get different treatments that sometimes I've never heard of. And sometimes I have, because like I said, with my long healing journey, I ended up studying a lot of modalities. So like Feldenkrais is something that I, you know, became familiar with when I had a sprained ankle. I went and got some Feldenkrais, which is a particular, I think it's German type of kind of like, it's similar to yoga, but it's physical therapy for injuries. It's like a yoga therapy. And it's incredibly powerful. And so sometimes I'll get, like, maybe I'll get that for someone. Oh, you should try Feldenkrais. You should try yoga. You should try a sauna. Like, so different treatments I will get intuitively during the medical intuitive scan. And that's really a combination of, you know, developing your intuition to receive, but also studying modalities, studying healthcare. And so, you know, what I encourage my students to do is to, you know, learn anatomy, study different forms of alternative health. And, you know, of course, some of my students are already trained. So I have like acupuncturists who come and study with me. I have nurses, doctors, naturopaths, you know, massage therapists. And so it's great. It's a great adjunct therapy, medical intuition. You could combine it with another modality that you already studied, or you can collaborate with practitioners at other modalities and say, you know, hey, I'm going to do the medical intuition scan, and then I'm going to send them to you, and then you can do the actual treatment. And
yeah, I was going to say, you must have an amazing referral network as a medical.
I don't have as much of a referral network as I should. It's more like I'm envisioning that I'm going to have it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I did have a few people that I've referred people to, but I was always thinking, oh, I need to know someone in that field. Oh, I need to know, like, every time I would come up with a new treatment, every time a new treatment would start showing up in the session, I would think, oh, I need to know someone who's good at that. And so my vision for the future is that, you know, we'll have these healthcare centers where every center has a medical intuitive in it. And that would be where you start to get your assessment. And then there would be all of these other practitioners there.
Yes.
On your assessment, maybe you're supposed to go to this one or that one.
Mm.
And work in a clinic somewhat like that, where the person who started the clinic had a similar vision, and she had me there, and then she had a chiropractic, and she had a massage mm-hmm. therapist, and she did fitness training. And so she had something, a model like that, and where we were trying to like assess people and then send them to other people, but we didn't have people. And so she used to get frustrated with me because she wanted me to like send everybody to the chiropractic. And I'm like, well, I didn't get chiropractic for that person. I got acupuncture. So if you don't have an acupuncturist in your clinic, I got to send them to the acupuncturist down the street. So, but that's my vision for the future.
Yes.
Is that we'll all be working together. And I do see that changing a little bit, you know, over the say 10 or so years that I was practicing full time as a medical intuitive, I've seen that change where I have clients coming to me and saying, oh, I actually told my doctor about you and they were open to doing the test that you recommended. Sometimes I tell people, look, I don't know what kind of doctor you have. You can either be honest and say your medical intuitive told you to get his CAT scan, or you can just say, my cousin told me to get a CAT scan.
Sure.
Whatever you have to tell them to get the CAT scan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times what I get in my medical intuition scans is I get tests that they should go get. And for me, that's an important part of the treatment, because it's going to be helpful for their doctors to be on the same page as me. And you know, I'm looking clairvoyantly, so I can see something like an MRI, right? But the doctor doesn't know me, or they don't necessarily trust me. So if I say, oh, I see a growth, like I had this one woman had a growth in the back of her uterus, I said, go and get an ultrasound, right? And she had to talk her doctor into getting this particular type of ultrasound that they hadn't done yet. They'd done a different one that didn't show up this problem, because the problem was in the back of the uterus, and the ultrasound they were doing was only showing a certain part of the uterus. And she talked them into the 360, and because of what I told her, but even after she had them run the ultrasound, they were like, oh, you know, we don't see anything, or they were still focused on something else that they thought was the problem. And then she said to them, okay, but can I see the ultrasound? Was there not a growth in the back of the uterus? And while the guy is standing there, he looks at the ultrasound and I said, oh yeah, I guess there is. So he was so blinded by his own presumptions about what he thought was the cause of, they thought it was a totally different organ.
Wow.
And he wasn't even able to see it. But once he saw it, he was able to adjust his treatment plan. It's like, oh, okay, let's look at that growth in the uterus.
Wow.
So once she has the doctor on board, then she can get treatment from him, right? And so in a lot of cases, that's what we need, is we need the person to be able to go to some type of healthcare provider and get the treatment that way. Now, in terms of the other part of your question, how does it relate to other modalities, other healing modalities? Like I'm an energy healer. And so I used to do a lot of energy healing. And then people would come to me and get a medical intuition scan. And they would say, well, can't you just do healing on me, right? And I was hesitant to do that because I'm always aware. See, we haven't talked about the book, The Ethics. This is where the ethics finally comes in.
Perfect. Yes.
I was worried about upselling. I was worried about being perceived as an upseller. And so upselling is when you sell someone something and say, oh, come get a medical intuition scan. It's only $150. And then once they're in there, they say, well, in order to address your problem, you need to come back for a healing, $300, you know? So I was always very wary of having a person feel like they signed up for one thing and now they have to pay more for something else. And so I often didn't promote my own healing services, and other people might, but I think you have to be careful about that. And so what I always tell people, like if I do a scan and I find out that they would benefit from energy healing, I would say to them, well, you know, one thing you could do is get some energy healing. You could get it from me, or you could go see a Reiki practitioner, you could go see a pranic. I will give them options. I'm not going to say, oh, you have to come to me to solve the problem that I identified. You know, that would be unethical.
Right, right.
So I that's the only kind of treatment, you know, that I practice is energy healing. And then for some people, well, if they have a spiritual cause to their illness, it might be appropriate for them to come back for a life purpose scan or to go. Again, I would tell them you can go to somebody else. Like you could go to, like I also practice past life regressions through the QHHT technique, but I might tell them you might want to go to a past life regressionist. You might want to go to someone who can give you an Akashic Records reading or a life purpose reading, or you might want to, or I might recommend some exercises for them to figure out their own purpose on their own, like some
dream.
But I'm not going to say, oh, you have to come back to me, solve your problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I talk about in the book.
Yeah, the Western medical system doesn't seem to have a problem with that.
Kickbacks if you prescribe the right things.
Yeah.
So would you like to talk a little bit more about your book and why you wrote the book before we...
Yeah, tell us about The Ethical Psychic.
Yeah.
Psychic. So I wrote this book. It was really guided by spirit. I had been teaching psychic development for some time. About 5 years, I was teaching psychic development every night, every Wednesday night. And I had developed somewhat of a community. And I was teaching a lot of other things too, Akashic Records, mediumship, Reiki, medical intuition. And what I was often emphasizing was ethics, was, you know, making sure that you are very careful as a practitioner, that you don't harm anyone. And, you know, some of my students were grateful for the information. They would tell me, you know, no one else is teaching us this. No one else in our other classes ever talks about this. And some of my other students were kind of annoyed, like, you're always talking about this. And, you know, I used to be a philosophy professor, so I taught ethics, you know, as a professor. And so I suppose that, you know, that may have informed my focus on that. But also, I think a big reason I was focused on it is because in a lot of indigenous cultures, the character of the medicine person is really primary. You only become a healer, shaman, or medicine person, you know, not because you have gifts, but it's because you have gifts and character. And so lots of people have psychic gifts, but they don't have character, and they're not good people. And just because you're psychic or a good psychic doesn't mean you're a good person. And so you could use your gifts to harm people. And a lot of people do. And so I felt that people needed a guidebook on how to practice ethically, both as a psychic or a healer, or a shaman, a medicine person, a medium, spiritual teacher. I talk about all of these different practices in the book, but also people need to kind of know what the red flags are when they're looking for a psychic or a medium or a healer or a psychic teacher. And so I outline in the book what the traits are of an ethical psychic. And I use the term psychic, but I use the term psychic and psychic healer in the book, but it can be applied to a wide range of practitioners. A yoga teacher, you know, it can be applied to any kind of spiritual teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important for astrologers and herbalists as well. You know, and a lot, you know, people are going to be listening to this or maybe more in that camp too, but it's anybody in the alternative medical environment, it's important to be ethical and to have good code of ethics, especially when it's not looked at very highly by the mainstream culture, you know, and there are so many shady people around and snake oil salesmen and so on.
So it's a bad name, you know, which is also why I wrote the book, is that we do need some standards and we do need some kind of agreed upon conventions about what's appropriate. And people, if people aren't taught that, they can also kind of easily harm people without intention, you know? So if they're not aware of some of these ethical guidelines, they may, you know, kind of mistakenly start practicing in a certain way, especially if they don't have the most ethical teachers. So, I mean, that's one of the things I talk about is, you know, you have to choose your teachers carefully. You have to choose your colleagues carefully. I had a number of experiences over the years where I was working with other psychics and healers who had some unethical practices, and I had to separate myself from them.
So what are some of those like unethical practices or red flags?
So anytime the person is not motivated by service, you're going to see some issues. And so that's the first trait I talk about, is that you should be motivated by service. And so we have these gifts, and they're called gifts for a reason. You know, they're not skills. They're not degrees. We didn't earn them. We were given them, right? And with gifts, you're always given them in order to give them to someone else. You know, they're not something that you get to then hoard or kind of hold over people's head. So we're given these gifts. We incarnate with these gifts so that we can be of service, so that we can help other people in some way. And anytime people get distracted by other purposes, you know, like, oh, I'm using these gifts to make money. I'm using these gifts to become famous. I'm using these gifts to have status, to impress people. I want to be on TV. People can very easily get distracted by those other reasons to practice. And there's nothing wrong with making money with your gifts. And there's nothing wrong with becoming famous for your gifts or being on TV, because that may be in alignment with your purpose. Being popular or being famous may allow you to spread the word and to help more people. Like, there are a lot of people who, because they have a huge platform, they're able to help more people. So there's nothing wrong with that. But when people get more focused on that than service, you start to have problems. And so, you know, you'll see people, for example, who are kind of well known sometimes in this field, who will start to think that because they're famous, they're always correct.
Yeah, it's true.
Lose their humility. So this is another trait that of an ethical psychic, is to be humble. No matter how good you are, no matter how famous you are, no matter how rich you are, no matter how many people tell you how you've changed their life, you have to remain humble. But if you start to get too caught up in how great you are, you're going to make mistakes and you're not going to catch them, because you now think you're infallible. And so that's one of the things, one of the kind of the risks. I talk a lot about the different risks of ethical work. Sometimes I have to look at my table of contents so I can remember what I wrote. So I talk about the risk of invading the privacy of others. So, you know, if you're a psychic and you're getting confidential information about people, then you have to
be safe.
And you can't go around talking about what you found out about people. Client dependency is another risk. You know, people can become very dependent on their psychics or their healers. And that can feel really good for the healer. Like, oh, this person really needs me. And they're calling me every day. And but at a certain point, you got to cut them off. You got to say, you know, you can't call me every day, or you can't keep getting readings from me every week or every month. You have to start living your own life. And you have to kind of not let people become so emotionally dependent on you. Financial exploitation is another risk. So if your services are expensive, or even if they're not, if someone's getting, you know, 20 readings from you a month, it's going to become a financial burden for them. You know, we have to be aware of that, and we have to not use our gifts to, you know, financially exploit people. And it's very easy to do, because people who are going to psychics or healers are often desperate. And so that's a category of people. Some people go for entertainment, but some people go, a lot of people go out of desperation. They're in a difficult situation, either in terms of their health or their family life or their job, finances, and they've run out of ideas. And they're like, oh, I'm going to go to a healer or a psychic and get some help. And so you have to keep in mind that if you're dealing with desperate people, you know, they might be more likely to, you know, do things that are irresponsible, spend money they don't have, you know. So it's very easy to exploit desperate people. And so you see this with these, what I call fake shamans and fake gurus, who, you know, create these communities where they're taking all of this money from people, and the people are becoming totally financially dependent on the guru. Like, they'll actually take all of their money and then have them live in a compound and work for free, right? And then they're financially dependent on the guru, and the guru has all their money. So there are a lot of examples of that in the United States, of financial exploitation by people who have psychic gifts. So I'm focusing on people with gifts in the book, because a lot of the people who become these powerful, like, you know, spiritual teachers became that way because they are truly gifted individuals and they are able to help people. But then they begin to get so focused on the ego and start thinking that they're better than other people, and start thinking it's appropriate to control other people. And they kind of get off track of the purpose of their gifts, which is service, right? Yeah.
I think that's very important, is to remember the reason why we're doing healing in the first place, mm-hmm. is to help other people. Mm-hmm. And losing track of that, yeah, can definitely, you know, create lots of problems.
I'm a herbalist too, because anytime you have specialized knowledge that other people don't have, you know, in the book I talk about, when you're psychic, you have power over other people inherently, yeah. Because you have access to information that they don't. So that gives you power, and you can use that power to help, heal, or to hurt. Mm. But you have to be aware of that power, and you have to be very vigilant and conscientious about that power. You can't just ignore it. And because we're not going to become ethical psychics without trying. It's something that you work at. And you work at it by always reflecting and thinking, could this potentially hurt them? Could this be hurt someone? Mm. Because it's not that we're always hurting people with intentionally, but sometimes unintentionally, because we have not been reflective enough about what the consequences of what we tell them could be. Looks like it's a medical intuitive. When I give someone information, I've got to be very careful how I deliver that information, because it can be very harmful. If I tell somebody something that's very scary, like if I tell someone they have cancer, for example, which is something I wouldn't do legally, I can't do it, but also ethically, I wouldn't do it, because everybody associates cancer with death. Mm-hmm. So you can't just tell someone they have cancer if you don't have if you don't know if they have a support network to handle that information.
Right.
So you have to be very careful. How am I going to tell them that they have a serious condition? How am I going to make sure that they take the next steps they need to take, that they don't, like, just go and, you know, die by suicide or go develop depression, yeah. Or go isolate? Or you have to be reflecting on, what are the consequences of my words? I may be trying to help them, but I have to also think about how they might not be helped by what I say.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are things that we have to think about. And I think as herbalists too, you know, like when I get herbs for people, you know, even if it's an herb that I know very well, I still have to think about the possibility that they might already be taking another herb at home that they didn't tell me about. And be taking some medicine, like some psychotropic medicine they didn't disclose because they don't want people to know they're on mental, you know, they have a mental health condition. And that might be an interaction. And so I have to think about those things, right? I have to reflect on, you know, is it safe for me to give them this information? And do I make sure that I give them all the disclaimers or all the advice about interaction? You know, what are all the things I have to think about? And for herbs, you know, there's herbs for health and then there's herbs for magic. And this is where I get more into the arena where I talk about in the book about how you use your gifts to pervert the will of another. And so there are people who use herbs in witchcraft or brujeria or hoodoo, but they use them incorrectly, or they don't use them within the tradition. They kind of go on to YouTube or TikTok and read a little book, and they're like, oh, now I'm practicing hoodoo, now I'm practicing witchcraft, I'm going to go take some black pepper and sprinkle it on this person's doorstep, and, you know, because they're harassing me. So, you know, but they're practicing the herbal medicine or the herbal magic, but they don't really understand the full context because they're either culturally appropriating, like in the case of hoodoo, a lot of people are not from that tradition, but they're appropriating it, or they just haven't been properly trained. They're just, right, they're just getting it from a 5-minute video. And then there's consequences because they're using herbal magic to influence other people, and they don't have the right to change people's lives because of what they want. And they don't know that because they didn't actually study like the witches read before they started doing herbal magic. They didn't actually study with a hoodoo practitioner who taught them the ethics of hoodoo and how, when and how you can use certain charms and, you know, and with whom. They didn't actually study with an indigenous, you know, shaman before they started using, you know, ayahuasca. They just were like, I'm going to start running ayahuasca ceremonies in my basement, you know, and they don't know what they're doing, right? Because they're culturally appropriated. And so then they end up hurting people, right? People end up having very bad experiences with the herb, either as a hallucinogen, right? Having a bad trip, or they hurt people with their magical herbs, or they have drug interactions with their medicinal herbs. And so there's also a lot of ways in which an herbalist or a person working with herbs can behave unethically.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And people who have taught me in the magic realm have always emphasized that consent is as important in magic as in anything else. And, you know, and I think that's very important to keep in mind. And trying to assert your will over other people is generally not a good idea. Yeah. And the role of, in my opinion, the role of a magician or a healer in the community is for the good of the community, is to heal people, not to engage in battle with other people or try to coerce other people to do things for them.
Right. Yeah.
I know we're coming up to the hour, but do you have time for one more question just about like spiritual protection and cleaning and how maybe you protect yourself from all of the various energies that may be coming at us at any given time?
Yeah, it's a big part of what I teach is the importance of setting up sacred space and having these rituals of purification. And I do think this is another one of the fallouts from cultural appropriation, is that people just kind of extract practices and they don't want to include all of the rituals because they're like, I don't want to sit there for hours and listen to music and go into a trance. And, you know, I just want to take the medicine. I just want to take the psilocybin, right? When they want to extract it from the practice. But the practices are there to protect us. The rituals are there to protect us. And so, you know, when I practice as a medical intuitive, I always set up sacred space. And in my office, you know, I set up an altar. I have a crystal grid and I work with the rock people and to set up certain energetic structures in the room, light structures, working with crystals. I also burn herbs like Palo Santo and sage or frankincense to energetically cleanse the space. I pray in the space every time I work. In my prayer, I do things like ask for help from higher levels. So I ask for help from my spirit teachers, angels, ancestors, and guides. And I ask for protection from them And I also set my intention for the healing session or for the ceremony of the class, whatever I'm doing. And that's very important that you always set your intention. I also encourage people to do an emotional inventory anytime they do any type of work. And that's where you sit with yourself for a few minutes and you review all of the feelings you've had over the last 24 hours. And you make sure that you're in the right emotional frame of mind to work with somebody. So if you're angry or sad or depressed or, you know, have very, very intense negative emotions, you can't work at that time. And you have to, you know, postpone and deal with your emotions first. Because if you don't, what you're going to attract is, you know, low-level beings, elementals, tricksters. You're going to develop, you know, rents in your aura. You become, you know, vulnerable. You're going to possibly project onto your client or to your students. There's so many things that can go wrong when you don't take care of your emotional hygiene and your spiritual hygiene, both before you sit down with a client or before you sit down to teach or before you go into a ceremony. And so it's important to take all those steps. And then I also do things like, you know, sage and Palo Santo, you can cleanse your space. You can also cleanse your own body with it by just moving it around. You can also use things like an obsidian knife to cut cords around your body. You can use, because I'm trained in a couple of traditions, so I use different things. I also use a broom. Do I have it? I use a little broom. Well, I don't know what I did with it, but because one of my spiritual connections is to Babu Laye in the Yoruba tradition. I was initiated, and so I use the broom to sweep my aura. So there's lots of different techniques you can use to kind of cleanse your aura, cleanse your space, say your prayer, set your intention, ask for protection, and then work with plant and rock allies. So I have the crystals in the room helping me. I have the plants helping me. I have my spirit guides and working. I also work with angels. And so that's where, you know, humility is important too. Like when people get caught up in the ego and thinking, oh, I'm so powerful, I have these gifts. No, you don't. You're just a hollow bone. You're just a vehicle through which this power works. We're not the powerful ones. We are the ones that power works through. And so one of the things I teach my students is that, you know, you really have to cultivate your ability to be a hollow bone. And so being a hollow bone is about keeping yourself pure and clean, not exposing yourself to a lot of negative energy. I talk about, you know, if you spend a lot of time in certain environments, that's going to kind of corrupt your aura and make it more difficult for you to be a pure channel. So if you're spending a lot of time in bars, if you're spending a lot of time, you know, at 7-Eleven at midnight, you know, there's certain energies, you know, in those environments that, you know, aren't the best. And then even if you're working in someplace like a hospital, if you're a nurse or a doctor and you're working in a hospital, you got to do some serious cleansing when you leave the hospital, because you're going to have some tag-alongs, you know, and you're going to have a lot of connections. Like you can sometimes get overly connected to your patients or your clients, where you have all these cords and you're connected to 50 patients who are all sick and suffering and angry and sad and frustrated. And they're all connected to you because as a compassionate healer, you have connected your energy to them while you're helping them. You've never disconnected. And so that's why there has to be this really vigilant, you know, purification rituals that you engage in. And every indigenous practice has purification rituals that are done before healing, after healing, before ceremony, you know. And there's a reason for that. It wasn't just more primitive and they like to just listen to music and dance. You know, there's a purpose in all those rituals. And many of them are to keep us safe and to also keep the other people that we're working with safe.
Yeah, I think that the purification rituals are just so important in general, especially for anybody in a healing modality or working with other people or working with magic or with other forces. And if you look even in like ceremonial magic and from European traditions, banishing rituals are important. If you look even to like the Renaissance or late Renaissance, even throughout the Christian Europe, praying was very important every day, you know, and that is a purification ritual of sort, and the holy water, and spiritual baths. There are all sorts of burning herbs. These are all very important ways of keeping the other bodies clean.
Yeah, I also do spiritual baths on a regular basis. That's from the Caribbean traditions I was trained in. Those are very powerful. I used to pray before they ate. Some people still do. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, a lot of stuff, once it becomes a kind of institutionalized religion, it gets, kind of corrupted. Mm. But you can think about the original intention of that is to kind of, use magic to make your food healthy for you and nutritious. Imagine you're mm-hmm. eating food every day, but you're saying some words over it, it becomes nutritious. More nutritious if you say certain words over it.
Mm-hmm. And when you're blessing that food and you're bringing that good mm-hmm. energy into it, then you're consuming that good energy. It's making it part of your body. I think it's a very powerful ritual to do on a daily basis or with water or with anything mm-hmm. you drink, doing that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation. Really glad that you were able to be here today. How can people get in contact with you or find your classes or find out more about you or your book?
My main website is drvestmedicalintuitive.com. So it's just drvestmedicalintuitive.com. And you can find information about my classes and my podcasts and my books and everything on there. But I'm also on social media, on Instagram at Spirit Teacher. Hmm. And I'm on TikTok at the, at Ethical Psychic. I have a TikTok for my book. Mm-hmm. And I have a podcast called Journal of a Medical Intuitive. And I'm teaching. I have a medical intuition class, a course on auras on my website. And then I also teach for the Shift Network. So mm-hmm. I have two classes that you can take on demand at the Shift Network on Indigenous medical intuition. And you can find out about those on my website as well.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.